Hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Carl Brueggemann.
And his brother, Will Brueggemann. Thanks a lot for joining us.
We have a very cool topic today. This is unused music. This is all music that was composed for video games, but not included in the final release.
Yeah, very interesting topic, because it's really fun to think about. In a lot of music that sort of serves a particular medium, you know, as far as like video game music, film music, or even for like musicals or something, there's a lot of themes and a lot of music that never sort of get past the drawing board, you know?
It never sees the light of day. Yeah, I think a lot of times when you're a composer and you have this job to make music fit a certain number of scenes, a lot of times you're going to write more than you need, and certain things will get cut. Certain things will get changed later.
Well, and also, if they fundamentally alter core parts of the game, they're not really going to be thinking about the music. So if a section of the game gets removed, the music that was inherent in that section also gets sort of thrown away. And a lot of times, they ask people to rewrite and go back to the drawing board, and maybe the composer sort of changes their mind about something.
Definitely, and I think Grant talked about that way back when we interviewed him. He talked about not being too attached to something you write, and a lot of times he would have to completely change something because a designer would come to him and say, you know, I just don't like this tune.
Right.
So a lot of times, you know, those unused songs may be really good. And just for us, for this music podcast, it's really fun to listen to those because they're
sort of like going
behind
the scenes a little bit, because these are some things that, for the most part, people definitely don't know as well. And they've only become available in the last few years because of, you know, popularity in video game music and interest in these topics.
Yeah.
You know, compilation disc sets that maybe have extra tracks, or just
Absolutely.
People going behind the scenes to get this stuff.
Yeah,
it's
those
really
kind
cool.
of compilations are really, really awesome, because that's the only way we're going to hear some of this stuff. Another great thing is, like, if you talk about like the 8 and 16-bit era, there's ways to download soundtracks, for example, like SPC files. And what's cool is a lot of those, like, built into the memory of the cartridge was these unused tracks, you know? So it's really kind of cool to find that. But yeah, I have a feeling that the majority of these songs, most of you probably have never heard before. So there's definitely some lost gems here. What you heard playing in with was from the game War Song for the Genesis, and that was unused Sound Code 5. Well, let's get things started here. We're very excited to share some great music with you today. Let's start off with an unused track from Ease 1. If you guys remember on our Ease Part 1 episode, we featured quite a bit of unused music. We were really blown away with how much high-quality unused music there was for that first Ease game. I'm always really interested in that case of Yuzo Koshiro writing music that was never used for the game, if the game was altered.
Yeah,
or
and
if
how
he just
young he was when he did it. You know, there must have been a lot of like trial and error, and it seemed like he was incredibly prolific just sort of putting all that music out there.
It just felt like it was coming out of him like water or something. It was just flowing out of him in such a high amount. And we did find out that all the unused music in the first Ease game was most likely composed by Yuzo. So let's take a track that we didn't play in our Ease episode. This is called Battleground. You're listening to Battleground, unused from Ease 1, composed most likely by Yuzo Koshiro.
Very quality. I really like how it goes back to that loop. It sort of reminds me of what we were talking about last week with some of the short loops, the way that you can disguise returning back to the top of the form again. This one does it in a really clever way, because it's another example of where it doesn't repeat that intro section. It just goes back up into the A section. But that A section is so cool and exciting. It has those sort of parallel harmonies with the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
This is a really cool example of an unused piece of music, because it's really interesting use of repetition. Like, it's this really small motivic idea that's repeated so much. And I can kind of understand why it was cut from the game. Like, it's not quite as strong, maybe as inspired as some of the other Ease music, but at the same time, it's still really enjoyable to listen to. And for me, I just love going back to that world of Ease 1 and 2 that, when I hear these lost gems, I don't know, there's just something so rewarding for me to listen to this. And it still feels at home in that world. You know, it was composed by the same man in the same era. He was in the same headspace. So it's so cool to hear that. But at the same time, I can understand why it was cut. from the game. And maybe it wasn't a musical reason. Maybe this was like an additional like boss theme that he didn't have to include. So we're going to move on to a game called Salamander, which I think was called Life Force in North America. And we've played a few tracks on this from the NES version. This is from the arcade version of the soundtrack. And this is an unused track called Combat. And this soundtrack was composed by Miki Higashino. Let's take a listen to Combat from Salamander. You're listening to Combat, unused track from Salamander for the arcade, composed by Miki Higashino. This is such a really well-composed track, and it totally fits at home in the Salamander universe. This really reminds me of a lot of the music we played for when we called it Life Force. Very similar compositional ideas there, and this is a really solid piece of music that it really holds up. I mean, it doesn't really feel any less inspired than the music that made the game.
Yeah, very powerful thematic ideas here. Very rousing. I like how much energy is really in this. Mm-hmm. Some pretty cool modulations and stuff that are going on. It's hard to believe that this was an unused piece because this is such a high quality. It's mm-hmm. of such a high caliber. I can almost picture this being like the main theme or something. Like, you know, it's so rousing, you know?
Do you remember when we were looking through the soundtrack of Life Force for that, I think it was like our arcade episode, like episode 5 or something, I remember being blown away with how many great tracks there were and how consistent they were. They're very similar to each other compositionally, but they all kind of stood on their own. And this is another one of those, you know? And what's cool is we're listening to the arcade version. And doesn't this sound like Genesis? Like, it's the same. It's a similar Yamaha chip, I believe.
Right, and it's so cool because the game Life Force, you know, it's such a level-based game. You
right.
know, you have those stage 1, stage 2, stage 3. All similar mechanics in each a different sort of environment. So it's like the music can be pretty similar. And it's not really like with Mega Man or an RPG or something where they really have to be descriptive to the environment. It's just sort of like new theme.
That's
and
a
it's
very
cool
good because
they all sort of use the same musical vernacular.
And you could probably interchange the themes and it wouldn't really make much of a difference.
Right.
They're very similar tempo. Awesome. Well, we're going to move on to The Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Ages and Seasons. And this came out for the Game Boy Color, right, Will?
Yeah.
Awesome. And this soundtrack was composed by Minako Adachi, who is, we've mentioned before, she's one of my personal favorite handheld composers. Let's take a listen to a track called Unused One. This is Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Ages and Seasons, Unused One, composed by Minako Adachi. Very strong piece of music, like most of the tracks are playing today.
Yeah, I'm such a fan of that Game Boy sound chip. I love the uniformity of all those pulse channels. Mm-hmm. There's such a grit to it also, both with the noise channel and
it's
just
like distortion or something.
Yeah, the particular sound of those square leads is a little bit grittier and grimier than the NES, and I like it. Everything feels very uniform, and it almost feels like more old school, almost more mm-hmm. nostalgic than the NES. Like, it's weird to hear it in such clarity coming out of your headphones because you're used to sort of hearing it quietly on a little Game Boy
speaker. You can really
tell
that it was never designed to be listened to at this high fidelity.
Exactly.
It was designed to be listened to on a crappy Game Boy speaker.
And I think it's cool the level of compositional prowess that goes into something like this. I mean, this is just sort of a standard example of a track, but it's really nice to step back and look at what makes this type of music so effective. I mean, great melody. The rhythms are all incredibly solid. It feels very authentic to the style that this is obviously going for. The bass line is very sparse and subtle, but just sort of gives that sort of rhythmic oomph that it needs, because that drum part is a really nice sort of...
It's a good march feel. I mean, Minako Adachi is just a master of creating interesting things. Every single aspect of it is interesting. You talked about the chords, the melody, the rhythms, the bass line, the drums, and I totally agree with you. Everything about this track is interesting, and none of it is very subtle. The one thing that I really respect about Minako Adachi as a composer, and on the handheld, she's so at home, is that she's not a subtle composer. She doesn't like to really take her time creating an ambiance. She gets right into it, and everything about it is very purposeful and high energy.
Yeah, it feels very like Beethoven almost, especially that sort of underneath counterpart that, like how it's moving. In some parts, it sort of serves its call and response, and then it does these little ornamentations. And
so naturally.
Yeah, each note is very well constructed. It's another example of using those classical music roots as far as instrumentation and orchestration and very quality arrangement. I feel like when you put the time and thought into constructing everything, when you hear it in this presentation, there's something so perfect and effortless about it. Like, you don't hear the human qualities. You don't hear like any amateurness. You don't, you know, it's really impressive.
Yeah,
it sounds timeless.
I think that really is owed to, it's so obvious that Minako Adachi had a lot of classical training. This isn't that easy to do. This isn't something you can fake. It's incredibly authentic. And in all of her music, I hear that influence. Even in something like Swordcraft Story, I hear that classical influence, even if it's a rocking kind of quintessential video game track. You'll still hear the really natural voice leading in the chords. Everything is just so authentic. And it's not something you can fake.
Yeah, and I think the nice thing is, for me, it's like, melodically, this track, it doesn't like stand out as being like one of the best or like incredibly catchy, but it's just, it serves its purpose like perfectly.
I agree.
And it's just, it's authentic, it's there, it's solid is the main thing. Like, it really fits in. Like, some of the other tracks you're saying, like, oh, maybe you could see why it was cut. This is something where it's like, It's up to the standard of quality that any video game composer would be shooting for. You know, it's doing its job perfectly. And I really respect, especially in the early days of composition, when a lot of the game composers were doing double duty, working on sound effects, and there was a lot more of a technological basis to their occupations. And I really respect when there's such a strong musical foundation underneath, and there's such an emphasis on, like you said, the proper voice leading and, you know, classical influence. I have a lot of respect for those men and women who went the extra mile to make that happen.
Definitely. This is a great example of that. We're going to move on to Banjo-Kazooie. It's really cool. We're going to play an unused theme that was composed for this game. This is an unused beta song called Advent, composed by Grant Kirkhope. Listening to Advent, which is an unused beta song composed for Banjo-Kazooie by Grant Kirkhope. Now, this one was really interesting to me. I was really glad I found this. I have a feeling, I'm not sure about this, but I get a feeling that this may have been a song that was originally composed for Dream, which was the project that turned into Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, it was intended to be a completely different game. I think it utilizes the same engine in the end, but the actual concept for the game was meant to be a little bit more open world.
RPG, a little bit more serious.
And I remember that Mr. Kirkhope, when we did the interview with him, mentioned that like almost all of the music was completely thrown out and started over, because the theme of Banjo-Kazooie is really nothing like Dream.
It's more happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, like,
but he
mechanically,
did say
it's
there was
the
a few of the themes that he did carry over. One of them was, I think, Mad Monster's Mansion.
Right.
He talked
yeah.
about it. So it's possible this could have been one. Or if anything else, this could have been just a song that was written for the beta of this game, and it was eventually just axed.
Another thing I like about this, it really sort of... It sucks you into the repetitious nature of everything, like that pedal sort of bass line. It's really nice. The harmonies with the flute and strings.
Yes, this part right
very
here.
Very simple, very primal, but really kind of pretty and ethereal in sort of a nice sense.
And it's just different enough. Like, it's just those ascending notes, and it feels like they're part of the structure that is very expected. But there's something, at least to me, especially when it's harmonized, where it doesn't always go where I'm expecting.
Oh, yeah, definitely, you know? Especially, you're right, when it's harmonized. Instrumentation is really solid. Just, yeah, very, very effective. A lot of nice sort of textures going on there. Mm-hmm. Really doing a nice job of utilizing the differences in the N64, you know, taking advantage of some of those mallet percussion samples, the better sounding string samples, pretty good flute. That timpani sounded pretty good. Like, I really like how he was using it almost as like a makeshift orchestra or like a pops orchestra a little bit. That's one thing I really like about the Banjo-Kazooie games.
If this was used in the game, I get the sense that this would be either like some sort of introductory theme, because there's not a lot of movement, there's not a lot of excitement to it. It's definitely not something that would be like a level theme. It would be something that would most likely be like some sort of cutscene or introduction to the game.
Yeah, it's funny. This is my favorite type of Grant Kirkhope music, just sort of a very pretty, very tonal, very happy, simple, very major sounding.
A lot less goofy than most of the music in Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, it's a lot less goofy. It's much more reminiscent of like the Viva Pinata stuff, and it's not as dark, and it's not as musically like thematic as like Perfect Dark,
and it's not as active, it's not as busy as a lot of the music in this soundtrack. So very cool. We're gonna move on to a game called Dragon Slayer Io Dinetsu, and we played some music from this game on our imports episode. If you remember, this was composed by Falcom Sound Team JDK. This was for the Sega Genesis, as far as the version we're playing today. This is Unused Song 1. You're listening to Unused Song 1 from Dragon Slayer Io Dinetsu for the Mega Drive, composed by Falcom Sound Team JDK. This was one of the few, there's I would say about 4 or 5 unused pieces of music in this soundtrack, and they're all of a really high quality, and this one, that's definitely the case. This is a great piece. It holds your interest throughout. I would say melodically, it's not amazing. It's not something that is probably as good as some of the other pieces in this game, or in general some of the other classic Falcom JDK soundtracks, but it's definitely high quality. It's something that I think would work really well in a video game.
Yeah, it's a very poppy riff when it gets to the ba 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 ba.
The groove of it is very strong. I see rhythmically this one just nails it.
Yeah, a little bit of aimless harmonic wandering that happened about like 10 seconds ago. Not really into some of the chord changes there, but for the rest of it, the structure of it is all really nice. Again, it's just sort of going through the motions a little bit, doing those very vintage sort of Falcom staples as far as the bass instrument and the orchestration of everything and the melodic nature. It definitely all fits that. I mean, I think this is my favorite part right here. Rhythmically,
absolutely.
It's nice.
This
I
riff
like the melody
great.
Here. It's a good,
it's a very
catchy,
hooky rhythm. Dun, 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 dun. It's very groovy, and it is something that hooks you right away, but as the song goes on, it's not quite as inspired. So again, I can understand why this would have been cut, but at the same time, it holds up to the rest of the soundtrack. We're going to move on to a track from Mega Man X5 for the PlayStation. This is cool. We get to play a track from this game because there may have been some of you that were disappointed maybe in either our previous Mega Man episode or our Capcom episode that we didn't play any really later music from the Mega Man X series. I think the last one we did was, what, like X2 or X3? So it's great. We're going to get to play a track from this. This song is called Dr. Right, and it was, of course, unused in the final game. This was composed by Naoto Tanaka, Naoya Kamasaka, and Toyuka Miyawaki. Let's take a listen to Dr. Right. You're listening to Dr. Right from Mega Man X5, composed by a bunch of people, a bunch of Capcom composers, released for the PlayStation 1. Next, we're going to move on to, this is really cool, this is from Sonic 2 for the Genesis, and this is actually the music to a deleted level. This is kind of a big deal in like the Sonic folklore. A lot of Sonic fans will know about this. Originally, there was a level that was being worked on for Sonic 2 called Hidden Palace Zone, and it was scrapped because there wasn't enough time to include it in time for the release of the game.
There was, however, a Hidden Palace Zone in Sonic and Knuckles.
Absolutely, and that was that idea came from originally from Sonic 2, but within the cartridge of Sonic 2 contains the song that Masato Nakamura composed for Hidden Palace Zone, because obviously the music is one of the first things that was worked on this project. So he, you know, he just went ahead and composed a track for this. Later on, it wasn't included in the game. But here's the song. This is Hidden Palace Zone, composed by Masato Nakamura. This is Hidden Palace Zone, unused, from Sonic the Hedgehog 2, composed by the one and only Masato Nakamura. This is really cool because definitely out of any of the tracks in Sonic 2, this is the one that, not surprisingly, I have listened to the least.
Yeah.
And this is a slightly longer form than most of the tracks from this game or from the first game. This is about, I would say, about a minute long in total, which is about 20 to 30 seconds longer than the average song. It does feel like it's looping twice, but that there's a C section that it doesn't come until about 1 minute through. And I really like the final chord of this song. It's a chord that really feels like kind of a classic Masato Nakamura chord.
Yeah, really cool stuff here. It's very ambient a little bit as far as like the openness. You sort of feel a sense of the scope of the level.
Right.
That's something Masato Nakamura does really well, but
yeah,
not...
This music was definitely, sorry to cut you off, Will, this was definitely a change of pace from most of the other music in this game, and I get the sense that he was going for that because maybe the designers told him, okay, for this kind of level, it's going to be a really spacey level. It's probably near the end of the game, so he was probably told.
And I feel like it really reminds me of Ease, especially because obviously the Genesis sounds a lot like the PC-88, but the fact that he's utilizing that Dorian mode for the melody, it really feels like something that like Miko Ishikawa would compose for the Ease games.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Especially all the instrument choices for the melody, you know, doesn't it just, it
feels
kind of like that. But another thing, like at the end when it's doing that sort of like chromatically ascending thing that starts to sound a little bit more rock and roll at the end, that reminds me of what happens at the end of the form for Scrap Brain Zone. So that's the point where I'm like, ah, Masato Nakamura.
There he's coming back.
Like, there it's coming.
Yeah, this is cool because it's a really slow waltz, which is again kind of contrasting to the most of the music you're going to hear in these soundtracks. But yeah, this is a very unique piece. piece, and I like how ethnic he got with it. I like how it uses the Dorian mode. It's definitely something that evokes either a different era or a different place. It's just very different from...
Yeah, he definitely did a lot of that in this game. Mm-hmm. You know, you get Oil Ocean Zone, having some of those harmonic...
Aquatic Ruins Zone.
Minor things. Aquatic yeah. Ruins, Mystic Cave. You get some more of those, like, ethnic-sounding things. And what I love is it's never one thing. You know, it's always a...
It's a melting pot, yeah.
Yeah, it's a melting pot of different sort of musical textures and musical palettes. You know, like in Oil Ocean, he mixes that really catchy that like rock bass line with those harmonic minor and Middle Eastern scales.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this, there's no question in my mind, this is his magnum opus. I mean, he only did two video game soundtracks, but I really feel like he went above and beyond on Sonic 2. And just for me, it's just, you can't get better than that soundtrack. We're going to move on to a game called Air Zonk for the TG-16, very goofy title. And this was an unknown composer. And this track is called Unknown/Unused Music. Here we go. Listening to Unknown/Unused Music from Air Zonk for the TurboGrafx-16.
You know, for all you hipsters out there, this is probably as obscurest as we'll get. You know, it's a not very popular console on a game which is not that popular. Again, on a console that not many people owned, with a composer that no one knows who it is, and this is an unused track from that game.
You so can't get like, more obscure than this, folks.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, this is like the cutting edge. Like, if you want to be cool, you'll really like this track, because no one else knows about it, right?
It's probably like 400 people in the entire world that know about this song.
I wonder if it's on YouTube. Probably is. That would be the real way to see how many views on the YouTube video of this.
Yeah, I wonder, like, if you're really trying to be a hipster, then would you take pride in, like, how few views you have? You're like, yeah, I wrote this song. It only has 3
views. Let's make a bet. when we play this next track, me and Will are going to go to YouTube. What do you think, Will? First of all, I have a feeling it is going to be on YouTube. Let's take a bet. How many views do you think this video has?
I'm going to go like 800 or something.
I'm going to go 1,234. We'll see who's right. We're going to move on to Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine for the Sega Genesis. This is kind of a Tetris-style puzzle game, obviously featuring the famous bad guy from the Sonic series. This track is called Unused Brave, and this soundtrack was composed by a lot of people. We have David Javalosa, Ainosuke Nagao, and Masanobu Tsukamoto. Let's take a listen to Brave. Well, me and Will just checked YouTube, and it looks like Will won that little bet, because there's 2 videos of that unused track from Air Zonk on YouTube. The first one has 779 views. Will, once again, guessed 800. The second one only has 95 views. So Will wins with a very close margin. So congratulations.
But Carl, if it makes you feel any better, I bet after listening to this podcast, some of our loving fans will probably check out those tracks on YouTube, and maybe it'll be closer to what you guessed.
Thanks, Will. That makes me feel a lot better. That was a fun little
game. What do you think about this song?
This is a very good song. What I like about it, nothing against the soundtrack, but it's very different than almost every track in the soundtrack.
Which is a good thing.
It's a good thing for me. I'm not a huge fan of this soundtrack. I've wanted to play music from it before just because I think it's a really popular, goofy game, but I was never really a big fan of the music that I heard. This is one of maybe my favorite track in the whole game, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean,
I like it.
I was never a big fan of the game. I'm just not really into a lot of those sort of Tetris ripoffs,
right.
Other than, like, I guess, Dr. Mario.
I remember playing quite a bit of it on the Virtual Console. I don't know why I bought this game on the Virtual Console. For some reason, I did.
Well, I mean, it's Dr. Robotnik. It's a sort of Sonic spin-off.
Was this included on the Sonic Mega Collection CD for the GameCube?
Yeah, along with, like, Sonic Spinball, 3D
that
Blast.
That was such
1,
a
2,
great value, that Sonic Mega Collection. That was
yeah,
awesome.
I remember when that came out, like, way back in the day. I remember we went to Target when it came out because we didn't have our Genesis at that point, so we're like, it would be so fun to get to like play these games
and before
two
Virtual Console
and stuff again,
you know. And it was a lot of fun. I still own that game. Hey, the next show and tell, I want to play the menu theme from Sonic Mega Collection.
Was such a good song. Oh, good call. Good call.
Let's try to remember that. We really have to keep a list of some of these show and tell.
I already
picks.
Forgot the one that I said last week.
I'll try to refresh your memory at some point. We're going to move on to Pokemon Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald for the GBA. This is a soundtrack that Will was really, really fascinated with on our Pokemon episode. He spent a lot of time listening to the soundtrack. This is an unused theme. This game was composed by Go Ichinose, Morikazu Aoki, Junichi Masuda, and Hiroko Takano. Let's take a listen to Unused Theme. Very solid piece of music. This is Unused Theme from Pokemon Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald. I'll give the reins over to you, Will, because I know you have a special place in your heart with this soundtrack.
Yeah, I was just very impressed with the quality of this soundtrack. You know, I think the biggest thing that surprised me with the Pokemon series is how different it is from the other Nintendo franchises musically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you definitely feel remnants of Super Mario Brothers,
some Zelda.
Legend of Zelda, but it's very much its own thing. And this
it has its own identity.
This soundtrack, to me, is sort of the height of that difference. You know, you have a lot more jazz influence, I feel like, with the chord progressions and some of the changes. You get a lot more diminished chords, you get a lot more dominant seventh chords and things of that nature, and interesting rhythmic techniques and instrumentation things that you don't get in Mario or Zelda, which definitely makes it feel of its own, but yet at the same time, harmonically and instrumentally and like how poppy and tuneful it is, it definitely feels like classic Nintendo
It feels
music.
Nintendo-ish. No, I totally agree with you. The thing that sets apart the Pokemon music, and specifically this game, is it's a lot more relaxed and sparse than I would say something like The Legend of Zelda.
It's definitely relaxed.
It's very relaxed. It's taking its time, and I get the sense that the Pokemon games in general take their time, and you're probably going to have a very relaxing time. There's obviously going to be battles and tension.
Yeah, because it's a lot more of like RPG strategy game sort of elements to it, less sort of action than Zelda, Mario.
And when you think about how huge it is as a series and it has just amazingly hardcore fans, I think they probably really enjoy just soaking themselves in that world, spending a lot of time just enjoying that world and immersing themselves in that world.
Yeah, one thing kind of cool is on our Pokemon episode, I actually listened to that episode with one of my friends. I wanted to show it to him because he's a huge Pokemon fan, and it was fun to see these songs that were very new to me because I never played the Pokemon games growing up.
Right.
Songs that felt new to me that I had just discovered, but to him, they were like these classic themes that
That's
he hadn't
great.
Heard since his childhood, and he was just so nostalgic singing along with it, and it was really special that it's like, wow, this music, which I definitely liked, but it didn't have that nostalgia
You were
for
more
me.
Objective about it.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's kind of like, it would be like for us, like on our Sonic episode, all that classic music, you know, That would be like the equivalent for us. Okay, it is time to move on to our track of the week.
Both Carl and I are just so excited to play this next soundtrack. If you remember the last few weeks, we've played some tracks from the Super Nintendo game Star Fox.
Yes, and this is from Star Fox 2, which was... This is perfect for this episode because we're playing unused music, but this is an unused game. This game was canceled.
Yeah, it was canceled. Mm-hmm. It was never released in Japan or America.
There's so much like lore about this game, and I remember... About 6 or 7 years back, I being so obsessed with finding out all the information of what happened. Why was this canceled? I was so interested in the story of this. You can get unfinished ROMs of this game, you can play on emulators. And the music soundtrack was finished. That it's just so it's such a great discovery. This was composed by Yumiko Kanki, who did F-Zero, I believe. And yeah, the soundtrack was completely finished, so you can get the whole SPC soundtrack. In this track, we're going to play Eladard. And when we started this podcast, when we had the idea of starting this podcast, this was one of the first tracks I was so excited to play on this podcast. I love this track, and I'm so glad that we finally get to play
it. And I feel like the musical style is very faithful to what Hajime Hirasawa did for the original Star Fox. And what's cool is since the first game, I feel like the rest of the series has really been defined by Star Fox 64. Mm-hmm. That's sort of looked at as like the first big game. But what's cool is this is before that. So this is a direct sequel to the Super Nintendo game. And musically, in the style of the game, and the characters, and everything about it, art direction, it's much more like the original Star Fox. So it's sort of cool to hear like a continuation of that musically.
This is just a badass piece of music. This is Eladard from Star Fox 2, composed by Yumiko Kanki. For me, this is just an absolutely classic 16-bit era video game song. This is Eladard from Star Fox 2, composed by Yumiko Kanki. It's so great to hear the F-Zero influence mixed with the world of Star Fox. It feels like some of these melodies have an orchestral flair to how they're written,
exactly.
But it's in a rock band context. A lot of jazz influence to the chords. Really great use of delay. Really spacey. Da, 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 da. It's just absolutely
yeah,
excellent.
And I feel instrumentally, it's completely faithful to the original Star Fox. You know, these orchestra hit samples, all the instruments, that delay effect, all very characteristic of the in-game music for Star Fox. Because if you remember, on the original
like
Star
Cornaria.
Fox, it's not as fully orchestral as far as the in-game music.
Yeah,
it's a
like,
lot more like this.
Cornaria was more like this, more kind of jazzy rock music. But, oh my gosh, like, this is so instantly hooky. When I first heard this about, like, I want to say maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I was blown away. And I've had this in my iTunes library for years. And this was, like I said before, a piece that I've been so excited to share with you guys. So hopefully there's some of you that have never heard this before and are getting a kick out of this, because this song means a lot
to
me.
And both Carl and I have played this game. We've played the ROM, which you can actually find. You can find the ROM of this game and play the unfinished version
One interesting thing about some of the gameplay mechanics of this game is there was going to be kind of like a strategy element to it as far as the map and how you can shoot. And a lot of that idea was actually taken and used in Star Fox Command, which was a DS game, so it's kind of interesting.
Another thing, this was the first game where you had like that all range mode where you could fly in a circle in sort of an open space, mm-hmm. which they used in Star Fox 64.
I think it was just a case of timing. I think the N64 is right around the corner. I think the budget, I think it maybe have went over budget or over time. And I just think that it just was a bad case of timing. I wish that this game would have been released because I think this would be another classic SNES game. But for me, it's a classic SNES soundtrack. We're going to move on to another unused track from Ease 1. This is Mysterious Moment, composed by Yuzo Koshiro. You're listening to Mysterious Moment for the PC-88, composed by Yuzo Koshiro, unused for Ease 1. This is such a great piece of music. Every single section is so well done. I love the intro riff. Dun, 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 dun. It kind of reminds me of like Michael Jackson. Really nice suspensions, classical suspensions. How about that use of dynamics? There's that one lead instrument that comes in like comes in from nowhere. It's really exciting. What do you think about this track, Will?
Yeah, I definitely like it. I think it's nice. It definitely fits in that world a lot. Definitely feels like Ease. Feels very much like a lot of Yuzo Koshiro's other music. My favorite part is the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, I really like what it's doing there. Reminds me a little bit of like Street Fighter or like a title screen kind of theme, I feel like a little bit.
Now, it's interesting. I feel like we have differing opinions of Yuzo Koshiro's early music, like for the PC-88. I think I get the sense that for a lot of this music, you are of the opinion that some of it kind of sounds the same and maybe isn't doing...
I mean, I don't normally tend to be on the camp of, like, everything sounds the same. That's one of my pet peeves when people, like, hear sort of superficial things about music and assume because they're using similar instrumentation or compositional devices that it's all the same.
Right.
For me, it's more about, I feel like some of the melodies aren't as inspired as they could be. I guess I don't want to say inspired. I feel like they're not as crafted as a lot of other composers. Like, for example, Minako Adachi, like all of her melodies and everything are so structured. And I know that's a different type of music.
I agree.
But
no,
even
I know
like that Star Fox piece that we played, like the melody is very structured and classically written. I feel like Yuzo Koshiro, and I mean, he was to his credit,
he was like
young
18, yeah.
at the time, but it feels very sort of unrestricted, just letting his natural intuition carry him. And that's nice to a degree, but I feel like it's a little bit unrestricted and a little bit too eager.
I totally agree with you. I know exactly what you're saying. And it is important to note that he was a very young, he was a kid pretty much when he composed this. So that is something to note. But recently I was talking with a friend and we were talking about why we like certain musicians, certain songs, and why we don't like others. And something that came up is we said like, oh, I like his brain. So for example, if you like a certain songwriter, it doesn't really matter what type of music they compose. You're probably going to like it just because you like their style of music. And for me, that's the case with Yuzo Koshiro. I like his brain. And even for something like this, it's definitely more unrefined and more raw. And it's more of just his musical taste coming through in a very natural way. And for me, I like his brain so much that I'm going to enjoy it probably more than other people would, you know? So it's very interesting. So let's move on to a Sega Genesis or a Mega Drive game called Bishuoju Senshi Sailor Moon. We're going to play Unused Sound Test 4, composed by Aki Hada.
Thank you.
cool. This is Unused Sound Test 4 from Bishuoju Senshi Sailor Moon for the Mega Drive. One of my favorite things about this track is those brass lines that diminiminate, how they're hard panned left and right. Those are very exciting.
Yeah, I really am curious to think about how some ideas like that really came to be. Because I've heard theories before about how a lot of Japanese game composers would compose on the technology. So they'd input an idea and sort of build their composition around what they're already inputting. Where I heard this is a theory again that a lot of more Western video game music composers would write their game compositions separate. They'd write it like on a piano or on a guitar and then orchestrate and input the parts into the game console. And I always wonder, ideas like that brass part that you mentioned, if that just sort of came as a little flair or color after the fact, or if that was integral in the composition.
I get the sense that it was after the fact, that it was just something that he tried out on the hardware, because it's so specific to the Sega Genesis. You don't hear that kind of writing as much on other consoles. Like, how many times have we heard, getting back to the kind of the whole sense of, like, having this has been done before, whether or not this is unique or creative, how many times have we heard that technique on the Genesis? It almost is funny how many times we have. So I get the sense that it was something that was just, that he just came up with on the hardware. What's interesting is one of the rare cases of evidence that I have for a Japanese composer that definitely wrote the music away from the hardware was something like Masato Nakamura. I know that he composed those on the piano, and he actually made demos of those. But yeah, it's very interesting to note that it's possible some of these, let's take Sega Genesis, some of these Genesis composers may have composed the music on the machine. And how does that differentiate from being composed away from the machine? You know, it's an interesting note. We're going to move on to F-Zero Climax for the Game Boy Advance. This soundtrack was composed by Kenji Hakita. And one really cool thing is, built into the cartridge, the soundtrack contains demos of the music that was eventually used. We're going to play a track called Lightning Unused. Now, there actually is a track called Lightning that made it into the final game. This is a demo of that track that originally Kenji Hakita started, and he made some changes. I don't know if it was him or if it was designer, but there were some changes that were eventually made. And one interesting thing is, for a lot of these demo songs, he didn't add the bass, because I think it may have been abandoned and altered for the final version. So this is kind of cool to hear that there's no bass on this. Let's take a listen to Lightning Unused. This is a great track. This is Lightning Unused, the demo version, composed by Kenji Hakita for F-Zero Climax.
Fantastic race game music. Very good for F-Zero. A lot of high energy. Very, very good guitar samples.
Absolutely.
Yeah, everything is really compositionally there. It's really spot on. Very solid. And I think the most important thing for race game music like this is to have that sort of wandering nature where you usually have three chords that you go back and forth, up and down, up and down. That's very important. Also, to have a lot of consistency with the rhythmic drive and a lot of energy, a lot of subdivisions with the chord instrument. In this case, it's a guitar, but having
It's the right tempo, isn't it? It's a perfect driving
also
tempo.
Also, having the drums play on fewer beats than what the guitars are doing, or in this case, it's some weird sort of like, I don't know, it's sort of like a rock organ kind of thing going on there.
What's so great is that I actually am of the opinion that this unused version of Lightning is superior to his final version. When you listen to the final version of Lightning, there's a lot of different melodic material that he changes. It's not the exact same song, and I like this version better.
The other thing, though, to think about with any type of music where they're going for melodically driven things, especially if it's very simple, there's always the worry of plagiarism and if it sounds too similar to something. This could be too reminiscent of an actual rock song or something where, I mean, this is something that they would sell, so they need to be careful about, you know, copyright infringement.
Who knows why that was changed, but it's really cool. I really recommend checking the soundtrack out because it's so great to hear. It's very rare we get to hear his original demos on the hardware, him kind of like tooling these songs and then the difference between those and the final versions.
Sounds really good for GBA. Another game that I would also recommend getting the soundtrack, F-Zero Maximum Velocity, also for the GBA. It's a super fun game, great continuation of the original F-Zero. Very solid game.
One thing that I like about this soundtrack is, in my opinion, this does a much better job of combining the up-tempo hard rock than F-Zero X did. In my opinion, this is very, very much superior to that soundtrack. Right.
Oh, and another thing to mention, since we're talking about unreleased music, the sequel to F-Zero for the SNES, I don't think it was released. And I'm not positive if that is different music. I know it utilizes some of the music from the original F-Zero, but it might have new music, and that's a game where I played the ROM back in the day on an SNES emulator.
Okay, we'll have to look into that for a future show and tell. That's cool. We're going to play another track from Dragon Slayer Io Dinetsu for the Mega Drive. This is a really pretty piece, and I really like the use of harmony on this. This is Utility Unused. Such a beautiful piece of music, great use of harmony, very Eastern style of harmony, lots of open harmonies mixed with some closed harmonies. I'm of the opinion that this is probably a Miko Ishikawa composition. This is Utility Unused.
And melodically, some of the runs are reminiscent from some of her other Ease music. Right there is what I'm talking about from Subterranean Canal.
Subterranean Canal, that's right.
That's one of my favorite Ease tracks. I really love Miko Ishikawa's composition. She's very solid melodically, and her
use of harmony is so advanced, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that incredibly pentatonic melody with not third harmonies, it's like fourth harmonies consistently. It definitely has that Asiatic sound to it.
I totally agree with you in the sense of, in some ways, especially in this early era, I get the feeling that Miko was a lot older than Yuzo, but she's definitely more advanced in certain areas of composition, and I definitely really, really enjoy her music and hold her in very high esteem, so I know what you're saying. Miko Ishikawa is excellent. We're going to move on to Kirby Mass Attack. And Will, did this come out for the DS?
Yes, this was a game that came out for the DS in like 2011. So it's a newer DS game.
Awesome. And this was composed by Shogo Sakai and Masaki Iwasaki. Let's take a listen to an unused piece of music called Enemy Listing. This is a fun jazzy piece that starts off with applause. Here we go.
Thank you.
So great. Such a shame this wasn't included in the final game. Really nice big band horn writing. Some of those really lush jazz chords in the saxophone and the trumpets and trombones. Just really well done. And I love how that section doesn't come until about like a minute through the loop.
All the samples are of a very high caliber.
That organ's fantastic.
Even the brass and saxophones sound very good, surprisingly.
For the DS,
I like how it sets up the ambience by having that fake applause, and you even get some like sounds of like people whistling and cheering, and like both the drum, the bass, everything. It sounds really authentic, both technically, like timbre-wise. The instruments are very spot on, but like you said, the voice leading and orchestration, very authentic. Really cool jazz chords, great three-part writing.
It's such a shame we didn't get to play this in our jazz music episode. This would have been great. There's so many of those we're going to find in the future. Really great jazz pieces. Maybe we'll have to have a part two of that. But yeah, such a shame this wasn't included in the final game. But we're really happy to share this lesser-known music with all of you guys today. Now, this one I'm really excited about. This is from Sonic 3D Blast for the Sega Genesis, composed, of course, by Jun Senoway. And this is an unused boss theme. So Jun composed this originally to be the boss music, and for some reason, either him or a designer either didn't like it, or he thought it would work better in a different way. So he ended up composing a new boss theme. And I actually like this one better than the one that was included in the game. Let's take a listen to Unused Boss Theme. Such a cool piece. I love the use of dissonance. It holds on a second. Those two notes are a second. That's so awesome. This is Unused Boss Theme, composed by Jun Senoway. Personally, maybe it wouldn't have fit the levels as well as the one that was, but musically, this is so much more interesting, in my opinion.
I think I know what this is from.
What?
I think this is from one of the Sonic 4 episodes,
because really?
Jun Senoway did the music. Now I'm
knowing
where I
think he reused it later?
I think he used this song in like episode 1 for
so
the final
interesting.
Boss.
So all of you Sonic fanboys out there that listen to this podcast, if you happen to know which later Sonic game used this, feel free to drop us a comment, because that's
this
really
is a
interesting.
Great song. It's so demonic. It definitely fits. There's a very specific nature when you think of music for Dr. Robotnik, because he's so silly and pudgy. So to get that sort of very bombastic, you know, mustache twirling villain quality, but also a lot of sort of campiness, silliness,
right?
Diabolical, though. It's classic arch enemy music.
Yeah, this is great 16-bit music right here. Jun Senoway is a very interesting composer, because I feel like he did his best work in this era. One thing to note, there's a storm kind of brewing outside, so if you guys hear the sounds of the storm being picked up on our mics, just wanted to let you guys know. So hopefully we'll make it through this podcast alive.
Pray for us.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on to a really rare, unused piece of music from Ease 2, actually. And this was really exciting for me, because I've never heard any unused music from Ease 2. All of the music we played that was unused in our Ease episode was from the first game. And what's really cool is that this is from the second game, and it was most likely composed by Miko Ishikawa. This was from a compilation called Falcom Special Box 91. Let's take a listen to Goodbye, a Doll. beautiful. This is Goodbye, a Doll, unused from Ease 2, most likely composed by Miko Ishikawa.
You know, this is a very great jazzy sort of pop ballad. Mm-hmm. It keeps her consistent melodic quality. It's very up to the standard of all of her other work. One of my favorite things about this, actually, in the beginning, if you remember all the way back to the beginning of this form, you had that sort of polyrhythmic ostinato going on.
Sure.
With the sort of call and response things happening at an interesting point in the meter, so you sort of felt wandering. But then all of a sudden it switched gears and went into this very cute little sweet innocent kind of ballad, and it's a fantastic melody.
It's very good.
It sounds like something out of like a Rodgers and Hammerstein, just like classic show tune. It's just a fantastic melody, and I could totally picture it being sung. It's such old school songwriting.
It feels like kind of understated to me. It's not like being very flashy. It's very humble. One thing that I like about it is that there's so many ideas, so many melodic ideas, and it keeps going and going longer than you initially think. Again, it's a shame it wasn't included in the final game. One thing, technically, I love anytime the PC-88 or the Genesis does that chorus effect with the PSG lead when they have two squares that are just slightly out of tune from each other to create that classic chorus sound. It's just one of my favorite sounds in all of video games. It's just, I eat it up.
Yeah, it's really solid composition here. Also, the melody is it's a singable melody.
It's
a very simple melody where it will land on a note a few times. Like, it's a technique you get a lot in really good songwriting, where it's sort of like lyrically it sort of carries over there, and you don't want a melody too sort of crazy and sporadic for singing. Like, it's a very authentic sort of pop ballad. It's wonderful. Yeah.
What a great find there. Hidden gem. We're going to play another track from Star Fox 2. I'm very excited. This is the Staff Roll theme, once again composed by Yumiko Kanki. Enjoy. So awesome. This is the Staff Roll from Star Fox 2, composed by Yumiko Kanki. This is just masterfully composed SNES music. I know I've said this so many times today, but such a shame that millions of people never got to hear this piece of music. It's just every bit as good as the music from the first Star Fox game. It just is incredibly well composed, well implemented on the SNES.
Yeah, I mean, it's really wonderful. I feel like it's coming a lot more from the Koji Kondo school of composition. But orchestration-wise, it's such a commendable job of trying to match the quality of Hajime Hirasawa's music.
Listen to this ending here. That's great.
Great classic sort of Star Fox delay. Instrumentation is wonderful. I mean it's hard to pick. I would still go with the music from the original Star Fox.
Sure.
Because it's the melody is so classic. It's like John Williams. It's superb. But this is wonderful. It reminds me a lot more of Koji Kondo. Harmonically it's beautiful. Melodically it's great. It's orchestrated again really nice. It's so commendable how after just one game in the Star Fox series, it's like Hajime Hirasawa really established like a tradition and a foundation that another composer could come to and really try to match. And we've heard only two songs from this game, but they're very reminiscent of songs from the original Star Fox.
In
but
different
yet they're
contexts.
Both different
because yeah.
you get that sort of rock techno kind of song, mm-hmm. and now you have this very traditional orchestral film music sort of sounding end credits piece, and it's really fantastic how well it meets the bar and mm-hmm. in many ways like goes above and beyond. And it is a shame that yeah. this never really saw the light of day, but maybe it's better that way because yeah, the music can really speak for itself.
It's so cool. I mean, hipsters would really love this soundtrack. No, it's just, I don't know, this soundtrack is so magical to me. Everything about this game is just drenched in mystery and wonder for me because I'm so interested in the story of how a Nintendo game in the heyday of the SNES was canceled. It's just so interesting.
Well, I mean,
me.
the making of the original Star Fox is sort of a very interesting story. Mm-hmm. Again, it was Shigeru Miyamoto's idea, and that man is just brilliant. He comes up with some of the most creative ways of thinking in the entire industry. I mean, from the very beginning.
Thank you so much for joining us today for Unused Music. We had a great time sharing this music with you guys. Hopefully you enjoyed some music that you probably have not heard before. So once again, remember to send us your picks for some of your favorite video game music tracks for our upcoming Listener Show and Tell episode. We've already gotten some just really great stuff so far from people, so we're really excited about that. Once again, my name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Thanks a lot for joining us this week. Hope you had a great time. Have a good week, you guys.
Peace out.